And we're back with another episode of Raps Rant, all things Raptors, all things NBA. We have another guest today. We have a good friend, great basketball player, John Blair. He is an avid investor and also, I call him league MVP of the Toronto Sport and Social Club League. 2017 champion along with you and I, Patrick.
Absolutely. Welcome, JB.
Thanks for having me, guys. Thanks for having me. That's a great introduction. I am an avid investor, although not an investor in Raptors championship futures anytime soon.
Fair enough. Hey, listen, you're holed up in Whistler. We're obviously here in Toronto. What's it like out on the left coast?
It's snowy, and from what I take of what's going on back home, it feels a lot better. I can actually go out and walk around, ski, sit at a restaurant.
Sounds like friggin' paradise right now.
The only thing that sucks is for sports, you kind of catch them midday with the time difference. So you end up either missing a lot of games or having to watch them over dinner, which upsets the wife some of the times.
Yeah, it's really tough. It's tough being you, buddy.
All right. Well, last week we left it off. We had our predictions that we thought that they'd go 2-2. That didn't happen, and they did the worst thing possible, because we were kind of midday for that day game on Sunday when it was big football day. They beat the Pacers. That was actually a great win. I will say one thing that's kind of positive on the next three games, which ended up resulted in losses, where, I mean, each game was competitive. Same story. Came down to the wire for most. I mean, Indiana pulled away in the next game late fourth. Milwaukee, same deal. And yeah, the following game, Sacramento, we really had no business even being close in it. It was just a really poor defensive showing, but came down to a controversial technical foul on Kyle Lowry and close game. So really, I mean, I don't know what to say at this point, except disappointment and really thinking that Masai might be up to something some point soon. And I would think it'd be more on the lines of dismantling, even though our guest last week thought he will only do a trade or something to improve the team. Well, I don't know. I think improving the team might be getting draft picks in the future. So we'll see. But what are your thoughts, guys? What are your thoughts on those games?
I mean, not having Norman Powell or OG Anunoby on Friday is, I think we really saw how important those guys are to the team.
That's the Sacramento game, right?
That's the game against Sacramento. Yeah. I like the game against Milwaukee. I thought they played really well going up against a much better team. But, and there was literally one play at the end of the game where it came down to, we had an open three. I think it was Stanley Johnson. He missed it. They came down, hit one. It went from what could have been a 1-point game to a 7. And there's the game. Indianapolis. Just a tough loss. But I don't know, man. It's the same story. We're on here again. Like, there's nothing new about why they suck this week as opposed to last week.
Well, you know what's funny is, like, you know, you watch that Sacramento game and the Raptors of past years, you know, good teams find a way to win, right? Well, the Raptors are just showing they're not a good team because they can't find a way to win. It's just completely changed and so dramatically and quickly this year that we're not used to it. And how many games now is it where it's come down to final possession or come down to close games? And we've got to be what? One or two of the games that are close?
Yeah.
Most?
I think, yeah. I mean, I watched the Sacramento game pretty carefully. I think it's glaringly obvious what's happened when we don't have interior defense. Guys were just running past our perimeter guards, and there's no one there to back them up. I thought that Sacramento shot surprisingly well from the three. Usually the Raptors, that's their advantage, is to be a three-point shooting team, have a high percentage there. Sacramento beat us in that category. And Sacramento guards the interior very weakly. But again, with no presence on the offense, really you only saw that manifest itself in Pascal having a big game, because basically when Pascal drives one-on-one, he ends up doing post moves. And like, it doesn't start in the block, but you can count that as a post up. And so I thought his numbers look good, but I think that's probably overshadowed by the fact that they're just a really bad interior defensive team.
And we've been talking about that all year, right? It's just another week where you really miss Marc Gasol and Serge Ibaka.
Yeah.
You know, there was an interesting article put out by 538 or 538. I don't know how you really say it, but they are excellent at providing stats. And one of the things that they've come out recently, just highlighting the Raptors, is how bad they are at finishing at the rim. You know, the 2-point shots driving the lane, their field goal percentage when doing so is under 40, which is really low. Like, we're talking among the league's worst. And they're passing out of their drives a significantly higher percentage than previous years, well over 50. So I don't know if you've noticed, a lot of times you'll get Van Vliet or someone else driving. It seems like, hey, you can go up for the layup or go for, you know, a contested shot in the lane, but they're passing it back out to the perimeter, taking too many threes. So as a result, our team is hocking up the most threes they ever have, shooting at a pretty good percentage, but they'll probably explain why they're getting big leads and losing them. They're just not good at finishing at the rim.
Yeah, I mean, I looked at year-over-year comparisons. I think that when you lose those two interior guys, shooting more threes actually makes sense. I think that when you actually look at expected value of a shot in basketball, people figured this out a while ago. I think Houston probably was the most famous example, where they brought in Harden and said, we're either going to shoot the three-pointer or we're going to dunk. Like, we're not taking mid-range jump shots. And so the Raptors, you look year on year, they're shooting 5 less 2-point shots and 5 more 3-point shots. And their 3-point percentage hasn't dropped year over year, despite having Pascal shooting 10% below last year and Aaron Baines, who I just have no confidence in. He's got a funny hitch in his shot. There's just something weird going on there. But the reason that we've maintained that 3-point percentage is OG stepping up big time, and Chris Boucher, who's like the Moneyball
rat.
You know, looks weird, skinny guy, played in the D League, was a star there, but no one pays any weight to that. Then all of a sudden you let this guy go, and he's after Matt Thomas. He's the next highest 3-point percent shooter on our team with legitimate shots per game. Yeah. So those guys stepping up, you see that the 3-point percentage hasn't changed. It's a higher expected value shot than our 2-pointers, especially without the big men. And so I think it's smart for us to be shooting more of them. But what you lose, obviously, from Noah Ibaka and Gasol is rebounding, interior defense. And so we've gone from where's my note here? Like, we were 11th in team rebounds last year. We're 27th this year. That's an extra like 3 rebounds a game. So that's a couple points of expected value. And then we can talk about the defense later. But man, that's what's got me the most frustrated when I start looking at these year-on-year comparisons. Like, it's just,
well, I think they're
what they did, I think, is going to go down. It's less obvious than letting a superstar walk, but what they did in terms of dismantling the defense, I think, is one of the biggest like GM team blunders of recent memory. I think it was a really dumb move. They should have paid whatever they had to keep that defense together.
Yeah, I mean, good point. Very good point. And that was, I think even, you know, the interior D and the perimeter D has suffered even from a guy like Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. I've mentioned it many times. I mean, he was very, very good ball defender. And he was and another thing that he was good at was crashing the offensive glass and getting some dirty buckets down low. Yeah, so he was a very good regular season player for us. Whereas Stanley Johnson, who's an excellent defender, he's only shooting threes. He's not going in the lane or doing any of those things. So just increases that chance of blowing big leads, because if you go through one half of a quarter of cold shooting, you're letting the other team back in.
You guys both, you know, both play. And I wonder, do you lend any credibility to the theory that when you lose guys like Rondé and Gasol and Ibaka, especially, that you take away all the statistical reasons why those guys were good? But do you just feel that the Raptors are lacking a certain intensity on defense that we've had in previous years that's just not there?
I'll just go quickly first. I mean, I think it's been with the amount of changeover, it's taken a bit of time to get somewhat used to each other. But I do see the intensity pop up. It's just not as, you know, we would get it game after game throughout the entire 4 quarters, whereas now you're seeing it very concentrated. So I guess it's a kind of yes and no for me. I've seen a bit of a decline, but it's still there. But I mean, it goes back to JB's point. I mean, the perimeter has an even harder time because, you know, guys blowing by, you don't have guys to bail them out.
Yeah, I mean, I think those two guys, specifically Gasol and Ibaka, they're veterans, they're older, they're willing to yell. You know, Aaron Baines isn't going to come shout at anyone. Chris Boucher is definitely not going to shout at anyone on our team. And so you lose that. But also, Phil nailed it. When you have a team defense, right? This isn't like we do have a bunch of individually good defensive players, but we play defense as a system. Nurse is like a great coach for that. And when you take big pieces out of that, there's a learning curve for the new guys to come in, which you're basically having to experience in games right now. So we're losing games so these guys can get up to speed, and they're just not as talented. So I think that, again, like you basically dismantled, you took away your veteran centers. You brought in new guys that aren't as good, and the players don't know them well. So the defense will improve, but it's probably not going to get to where it was, where literally last year we were first. We were the best defense in terms of points, second in an opponent's field goal, first in three-point percentage from opponents. You look at where we are now, we're 13th, 12th, 17th in those categories. So, yeah, there might be a bit of room as guys get familiar, but you're not going back to first. And again, Phil said this, you win on point differential. It's not scoring points. It's how many points you score versus how many points they score. Some teams have superstars, they score 120 a game, but they give up, I don't know, 121 or 118, and they're not.
Washington, you got the Bradley Beal scenario.
Yeah. So you dismantled the best defense. It's like breaking apart a super team, except it's less obvious because, you know, Ibaka and Gasol, they're it's almost better to have that system because those guys don't cost a lot. Like, we could have had them. I lost track of the discussions of what they wanted, but just pay it. Pay the luxury tax if you have to. You have the best defense. Last year you were one Siakam series, bad series away from basically going to the finals again. And I just think that it's a travesty that you let those guys walk. If Bell and Rogers had asked us to pay like an extra $2 a month on our cell phone bills to cover those costs, everyone would sign up. You know, they'd have a million people immediately say yes. So that was just such a big screw up and very frustrating.
I agree. I think they gambled on Giannis because he hadn't decided. It was a mess up. No other way to say it. But I will say it, because so you mentioned the point differential. That's the only positive, or at least maybe I look at this Raptors team, I have one thing that's positive, and they still have a plus point differential, as small as it may be. Right now, it's just a 0.4. It's one of only six teams in the Eastern Conference that is positive. So maybe we're going to have to give this team another 2 weeks. Let's see if that plays out. The sample size has to get larger. They also have to execute in those late game scenarios and score some 2-point baskets. Someone's got to step up, and it's got to be Siakam. It really is. Consistency. Yeah, I'd like to see him, Pascal, stop giving him the ball to bring up the floor. Set him up in the post more. And a number of times you'll get a defensive rebound, or if he gets it and he brings it up, what's the point? He ends up passing it anyways. And if he tries to gain some steam, he's only got one move. It's predictable. People know it now. He's not as successful. That's my thought.
But in the article that you sent, Phil, it was pretty evident. Right? When you look at the Raptors losing streak, it was almost directly correlated to Pascal's passing out of drives. And the 5-game stretch where we went 4-1, he basically did the inverse. He was taking a lot less threes per game. He was taking it to the hoop more, and we were winning. And I mean, that's not everything, but I think it's a huge factor. And I get frustrated in planning for these podcasts because I don't know what to say about Pascal Siakam, because he has a game where he'll get 11 points and 2 rebounds, and then you'll be like, you know, F this guy, get him off the team, let's trade him. And then he'll come back and he'll put down 32, and you're like, okay, well, maybe he's back. And he's got
talent. Yeah.
I think Siakam does everything the hard way. Like he takes too many steps in his one-on-ones. I said before, he'll go from a drive to backing you down. Like when you play as a defender, if you can get a guy to turn his back on you, you've won. Like, that was always the adage. Like if you can get a guy that basically doesn't want to just try to fake you out one side and run by you and turn his back, that's it. he's going to pass out of that. So Siakam's been effective in sort of turning those back downs into some sort of a post move up and under, but it exerts so much energy. And then you see him now, where his 3-point shooting is down on the year. And you wonder, is this just a guy who's tired at the end of the games? Because he's getting all these isolations where he's like spending all these extra steps. And like, I think Siakam just needs to simplify his game, get in the gym, shoot 1,000 threes a day, whatever he needs to do to get those numbers up, and then just work on really simple one-on-one moves. I think he's a big enough guy. He's got great footwork. He can do that. He doesn't need to do if he wants to post up, great. Feed him the ball in the post. Maybe he's got a smaller guy on him, slower guy, whatever. But if you're going to start at the three-point line, find a move where you're not forcing yourself into a post-up, because you're depleting your energy. I don't think that's the right style for him.
Well, and it just his numbers were, that's why it's so frustrating, because his numbers are amazing when the Raptors, when they're winning, it's because he is effective scoring down low. You know, the games where they were 7-10 record, so it doesn't have the last two games in it, so it doesn't have the Sacramento game. But, you know, the Raptors before that, they were 4-1 with him, 1-1 without him. They were a +9 rating when he played, and he was hitting quite a bit of his twos. His 3-point shooting percentage was still 14%. Nobody cared. He was taking, I don't know, 2-3 games shots tops per game. So, yeah, I mean, he may have been doing it the hard way, as you say. I do agree with you on that, but he was at least making them. So if he can try and simplify that a bit and really get consistent and shoot 50 to 60% and get back up to 24 points a game average, that's a big deal.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I think more in terms of when it matters in the playoffs. If you have a guy who's not able to hit threes, or at least shoots threes below a league average where you encourage him to take them, defenses will adjust on Pascal, and you'll see another bad series, and everyone will throw their hands in the air and say this guy sucks, and why'd we build around him? But it's not any of that. It's just you need, for a player like him, you need to build from the outside in. You need to have that threat of a 3-pointer. It'll make your life so much easier. Yeah. And to get that, you can't be tired at the end of the games. And I mean, you know, they're not comparison, but look at a guy like Kawhi, right? When he scored inside, he doesn't take extra steps. No. He uses his power, uses his height, uses spacing, and he gets really simple 2-point baskets. And Siakam, I love watching him play because he's like a mini Elijah Wan in a lot of the things he does under the rim. But he, you know, all that stuff takes out energy, and at the end of the games, it matters. And defenses will adjust if that's your only go-to.
Well, if there's one thing that I could say he needs to remove from his game is that stupid 1-foot fadeaway jumper. If I see that again, I'm going to freak out, because it's just awful. At no point, and he does it sometimes when he's just, it's almost like he's getting shy or afraid of contact or just being close to somebody, so he automatically does it when he's at the high post. It drives me insane. Just go up, just go straight up, shoot it.
Unguarded 1-foot fadeaway. Like, are you telling me that doesn't affect your shooting percentage at all? Like, is he shooting free throws that way? I don't get some of this. It's another point you bring up too. I saw against Miami, they were playing a 2-3 zone, which we all know very well from our days of Pippen Ain't Easy. And like, they throw the ball into the high post, and Adebayo or whatever on Miami is under the rim, right? No one's even guarding the high post, who's basically a step from the free throw line. And we're not taking those shots. And I got to think, like, if you're shooting free throws at 70, 80%, how do you not have a guy that can hit that wide open shot at 60, 65%? That's 1.2 points per expected value. That's as good as taking a wide open three at 40%. Like, some of these things, I don't think they think about what the expected value is from your shot. I think it's starting to be felt in the league, but I still think guys just are afraid maybe there's no rebounders or whatever. I think you have to take those shots when you're wide open. If you can shoot above 50% from a two, you have to take that shot.
Well, you know what the best example of that was? It was game 7, Denver, Denver, Portland, and McCollum shredded Denver with that mid-range high post, basically free throw line jumper in game 7, and it won them the series. Because he went in there and he hit like 4 out of 5 in crunch time. Because he shoots 80% from the line. they couldn't stop it. It was an easy jumper for him. So, yeah, I agree.
And that's the difference between us winning and losing those close games.
Correct.
Now, as we look forward to this week, we've got two games against Orlando. We've got our long-awaited matchup with Brooklyn. I've been excited about this. I'm not necessarily.
I just want to watch it from his fan perspective.
Yeah, I want to watch. I want to see that. I want to see the big three against this. And then we have a Saturday night game against Atlanta. For tonight's game against Orlando, OG is out. Patrick McCaw is out. And Norman Powell, doubtful with.
You have to mention McCaw at this point.
Well, I'm just reading the injury report. And Norman Powell is out as well. Yet the Raptors are still favored by 5.5 points against an Orlando team with a comparable record. An equally shitty record, I should say. So I guess a question for you guys is, can a hobbled Toronto team, I actually think you take Norman OG out is a very significant for our team. Are we going to beat Orlando tonight with this shortened bench?
Well, I'll just say really quickly, like Vucevic doesn't have to see Gasol, so he's dropping 40 on us tonight.
Good call. My opinion is go to Vegas.
We should win this game.
Well, it's a good time to face Orlando. We'll put it that way. They really have been devastated since Fultz went out.
They have. And JB, you do a lot of business down in Atlanta. We've touched on them a few times this over the course of this season about expectations versus reality. What do you think of the Hawks? And assuming that we have one of or both OG and Norm back, what do you think that game's going to look like?
The Hawks are legit. They went through their rebuilding. They got a lot of young talent. Trae Young, even though I thought the Doncic trade was ridiculous, because I think Doncic is a generational talent. Trae Young is up there as well, but I think there's a gap between them, especially defensively, Doncic just being a bigger guy. I think that Atlanta did the right things for a rebuilding team, and whether they can beat Toronto, I think they probably come in as the favorite. And we'll just see. It'll probably come down to how well we shoot from the three. But I think that brings up a good point on rebuilding, because you hear a lot now, what's Toronto going to do in this situation? Should we rebuild? Should we sell off talent? And teams have done this, but they haven't won. Like, would you rather be a Philadelphia fan right now or a Raptors fan? Philly obviously they're leading the East. They have a way better, more talented team. But you got beat by the Raptors. You didn't win. Like, we always will have that. And so the whole gamble of taking a few years off to acquire talent and acquire picks, like, I don't agree with it. I think it still leads risk. It doesn't guarantee you a championship. It guarantees you a good team at some point in the future. But you can get there without having to waste seasons. Like, look at a team like the Spurs. They have a great system. They have great coaching. They find these gems late in the draft.
If we go back to the point you were making, JB, just start from where you cut it at.
Yeah, so again, the whole rebuild, teams have done it. They obviously improve at some point in the future. I remember, the Clippers of old with Darius Miles and Oluokandi and stuff. They were perpetual jokes. They always ended up having a top three pick. They did nothing with it. So there's errors in your draft picks. Like, there's a lot more uncertainty than people think. And then Philadelphia, which now has the result of the process, right, where they have this great team. It's number one in the East. But they still haven't won anything. They got beat by the Raptors. I'd much rather be a Raptors fan today with a championship in hand, a great team like system, a good coaching staff, you know, players that are champions that have that attitude versus Philly and a Philly fan where you came close, but you lost. And we all know as Raptors fans how that feels. So I don't agree with the destroy and rebuild system. I think that the Spurs are a great example of a franchise that has always been good, always try to win every year. They do well in the draft in late position. They do well of bringing in players and improving their games with their coaching staff, their trainers. And I think that's what the Raptors should be in the East. I just think there's way too much uncertainty in the draft. In Toronto, as we've seen, we're not good at keeping stars. We don't attract that top tier talent. What we get are these guys that are undervalued in the league, that are either undersized, a little bit slow, but are really good players that we can plug into a system. And we're very you basically earn your minutes in Toronto. We don't have coaches that play the number one draft pick, the first round draft pick, over other guys. Like, if you're not playing well, you ride the bench. If you're from the D League and you're good, you get minutes. Like, that's where a lot of guys in the NBA probably want to play, because if you're good and just don't have the opportunity, you come to the Raptors, you'll earn the minutes you earn, and you'll get paid. So I think that should be the Toronto strategy of the East. It fits with our ability to attract talent, and it doesn't give us seasons where we just say, oh, they're a write-off, they suck. Like, who wants to be a sports fan for that?
So getting into
Pat, let me cut you off one thing I want to bring up. As you mentioned, you know, it's a merit-based system. You play your ass off, you're going to get on the floor. That really worked well for Nurse last year based on having those veterans and mature player base to go in and out. Do you think Nurse is responsible for any of this inconsistency among the team? It seems like different lineups all the time, different players out. Like, what are your thoughts on that?
I think that it's been interesting to watch. The one thing that he's obviously got to bear some responsibility for it, but I will give him credit that he has been not afraid to move his lineup. He's not afraid to change his starters, and he's not afraid to sort of throw out different looks to see what's working. And so at the very least, I'm sort of happy that there seems to be a mind at work. It's not like Dwayne Casey, where it was like, I'm going to stick with my plan. If it doesn't work, I'm going to stick with it right till the end.
Yeah.
Like, I get the sense that Nurse is at least trying to coach his way out of it. Has, I think, legitimately run into some bad luck. I don't know what different he can be doing.
Yeah, good point. I mean, for the Raptors at this point, like JB, as you mentioned, you know, play out, try and win, get into the playoffs, extend that streak, you know, act like winners. Yeah, what do you think of this team if it gets a run and is the 7-8 seed? Yeah, it should be still an entertaining series, would you not think, whoever they're playing?
Yeah, I think that teams probably don't want to play the Raptors in the first round in the playoffs. I don't think we'd be a favorite, but I just think that the fact that we have these defensive schemes that can really frustrate guys, they've seen it before. If we get a hot shooting streak, we can really like put some teams at risk. That's probably our best upside for the year, is like a 6-8 seed and maybe win a round, even two, in the playoffs. We're not beating Brooklyn. We're probably not beating Milwaukee. But that would be a really good outcome for this team. And then you just have to rebuild that center position next year. You got to bring
in. That's key.
Yeah. Yeah.
You got to upgrade that. If there's any position that's going to be important to build, is that what I noticed Hassan Whiteside was on Sacramento Kings. Like, what happened there? Did he just sign with them like off waivers? Like, where was he before? Why wasn't he on the Raptors radar? I was like, you could use that guy in our team.
A $2 million a year, 1 year contract.
Oh,
now you just say, no, we don't want that guy. You know,
we'd rather have Aaron Baines.
What?
Yeah,
exactly. 7 threes in a game.
I literally saw him go out for Sacramento. I was like, that guy would be perfect right now. Like, wait, maybe not perfect. Like, just for the scenario we're in, he would be a big upgrade. You know, you don't have to rely on him to score anything, but that interior D just goes up like substantially.
Well, he's not shooting threes for you, but at $2 million, he's a guy that sits on your bench until you're in a situation like that Sacramento game where you're just getting pumped inside.
Yeah,
throw him out there. He stops all that. Like, it's optionality based on what's happening in the game, and it's very cheap. Like, he's not a replacement for Ibaka or Gasol on the offensive end, but he's a piece that you want, and for the league minimum, he's a guy we should have been involved on.
Yeah. Yeah, I was shocked with that one.
Yeah. Few things from around the NBA I thought I'd bring up. Bradley Beal is going somewhere. So we had the James Harden sweepstakes. It appears we're going to have the Bradley Beal sweepstakes. A lot of teams that could that would be a great fit for him. What do you guys like, and where do you see him want to go? I'll start off by saying I'd love to see him end up on Golden State.
Huh. Do you want to bring him to go? You're eventually getting Klay Thompson back. Are you meaning just for a push this year? Well, how much does he have in his contract? First and foremost, like what's his deal?
They'd have to send some back, I think. And I don't think you could do it without Wiseman as being a part of it with a pick or two. But I mean, I think that if you're the GM at Golden State, how long left do you have with this team? And I think the clock on Steph Curry being, you know, as elite as he is probably on running out. So I think it makes sense for them. And you might cost them Oubre and Wiseman, but I think you put Bradley Beal in that backcourt with a healthy Draymond, and they could at least make some noise in that West.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if the Lakers would just be like, hey, let's just try and guarantee this championship as much as humanly possible. And I'm sure that they would do it.
He's a $28 million a year.
Huh. And he's got like how many years left? Like three, two?
I believe he has two.
Two. I mean, I'd love for that's the ideal person to try for the Raptors to try and make a move on. But who the hell do they give up for him?
Well, why would you? So, exactly. Do you give up so much that we're in the same position with different players?
Could be. But I really don't know. That's a tough one, because you look at the teams that are, you know, that are borderline contending with the likes of the Lakers, Clippers, Bucks, etc. I don't know. Is it? They all seem to have that Beal position. Who really needs him as an upgrade right now? I mean, it's really tough. I'm actually have no idea what to say on it.
He's leading the league in scoring. I think the reality is any team that can get him. If Golden State could get him for Wiseman and Oubre and a few picks, like, you do that all day. I don't know how the Lakers could package it, but they do it. I mean, I wouldn't, you know, LeBron's the king of the stacked team, and if he can get him, he would. But it's almost a joke in a sense that these already elite teams are able to get, you know, the league scorer who just happens to be on a terrible team. Like, it shows you how the NBA works. And I wish we were part of that. When we were champions, we would be able to attract these great players. But the reality is there's big market teams, and they somehow always just get these stars in these weird spots.
Yeah.
And yeah, so good point.
The other, anyone's the gonna other big the market I heard was Philly. I was just going to say the other big market rumored for Beal is Philly. There's been a lot of talk of Ben Simmons going that way. I think Philly struggles without Ben Simmons' defense, so it'll be interesting to see if they want to do that. It'll be fun to see where he ends up going and how it shakes up the league. The other person who's been rumored to be on the block is Zach LaVine. Potentially, there was even talk about him going to Brooklyn today. I think I just report the news. I don't make it.
Well, I'm shooting the messenger. It's ridiculous. If Brooklyn adds another piece, I mean, how bad is that for Kevin Durant? Like, there was talks of Drummond going to Brooklyn. Like, you know, he breaks off from Golden State thinking, I'm going to go on my own. I'm going to show everybody, you know, those championships weren't just a complete joke. And now he's stuck with Kyrie. They just got Harden. And then you add someone like LaVine or Drummond on the team. It's like, what's the point? Like, who's going to compete? It's Lakers, Brooklyn. That's it.
So that brings up another interesting question. I got in a one-way Twitter war with Magic Johnson this week. He proclaimed that he believes the Philadelphia 76ers are going to win the East and go to the NBA Finals against LA. This was after the Tobias Harris shot at the buzzer to beat the Lakers. I don't see it. I can't imagine.
There's two teams I'm tired of the talk of their now Philly's put it together. They've added a couple of nice pieces that go well. I mean, Seth Curry was a good addition, and they're just playing well at this point. Embiid is healthy. It's consistent. I'm tired of hearing about Milwaukee and Philly. You know, until they get somewhere and do something, get to a get past that next hurdle. I don't want to hear about it. Milwaukee is struggling right now for a team that's supposed to hands down lead the East or be among Brooklyn. No debate between the 1-2 there. But Philly, yeah, I mean, let's see them win in a 7-game series against Boston or Brooklyn before there's any talk. I mean, you should favor those guys first before them. I don't care where they are in the standings. Like, the Raptors were number one at one point. Nobody really gave a shit. Like, it was like, hey, they got to go through LeBron, which they're not going to do. I don't think Philly's getting anywhere, especially with Ben Simmons, who he's a fourth quarter liability on the offensive end. You can't just go drive the basket. He has to be able to shoot. And then it becomes an issue.
I agree. I think anybody predicting a team that's not Brooklyn to come out of the East is nuts. I mean, it might happen, but it's not the likelihood. With all that talent on Brooklyn, I just don't see how they can't they can't get it together. You have guys that have basically you have it used to be that the West was completely stacked with all these stars. And now we've had a couple of them come over to the East, and they've all joined together in one team. They've gone deep in the playoffs before. You've got Durant and Kyrie, who are champions. Like, you're telling me that these guys are somehow going to choke in the playoffs against Ben Simmons and Embiid? Like, I don't even think that's absurd. It's a farce.
That might actually make the unacceptable list this week. Is Magic Johnson with that?
Yeah, Magic.
Pat, you're on mute.
I said I had a extremely strongly worded tweet back to him about his Philly prediction, and I think he probably read it and realized that it was a bad take because he didn't respond.
He realized he can't go up against this Raps Rant panel. It's too strong and too knowledgeable. No,
exactly. I would tend to agree. I still think it's Brooklyn. It's Brooklyn, LA. And there's been nothing that's happened this week that's changed my mind on that.
A question for the panel here. I was arguing with someone earlier this morning on this. Boston put up, like, on their game last night against the Lakers, they put up a side-by-side showing the teams, the history, and the number of championships. They're both at 17 each. And Boston put an asterisk beside the Lakers where they said somewhere, I think there was 4 in Minneapolis and one in the Disney bubble. So they're trying to say, hey, not the same. I do think last year's championship is an asterisk. I would say that the Minnesota ones, though, they count for that Lakers franchise. You got to include them.
Wasn't that before the NBA?
Wait, like the ABA or whatever it was, or the NBA together? No, I think they're we're going to have to look this up.
Yeah, I would actually disagree with you on both points. I think the bubble is not asterisks at all. I think that was a very difficult title to win. And I think the Minneapolis Lakers from like 1842.
Yeah,
like,
it's not 1842. There's not a chance.
I don't think so. I think it's very difficult to count those.
I think franchise is a franchise. You know, you move it over, same name, say a different area. If that qualifies as NBA, those are their championships.
I don't know.
Well, in any event, I mean, I totally think last year, the fact that there's no real home court advantage, it was a fair champion. It was a hard championship to win. By no means was it easy, as you get everyone level playing field. But, you know, for teams that, I don't think Miami goes through the finals in a regular environment with home court advantage for many of these teams. Like, I just don't see those guys like Hero and Duncan Robinson, who would have never experienced a deafening fan base in their ear while they're shooting. I don't know. Maybe they would. I could be completely wrong, but I think the probability is low.
Yeah, I mean, as far as asterisks from last year, the fact that it was in the bubble, I think, is irrelevant. That probably made it harder on teams and easier. The one thing the Lakers got lucky on is their matchups, right? They had Denver and Miami instead of the Clippers and Milwaukee. And that's just what it is. You know, the Raptors won with hobbled Golden State, and people want to say that's an asterisk. It's not. Part of the league is staying healthy, and part of it is winning series. So I don't believe there's any asterisks. LeBron got his. What he's doing at this age is ridiculous. I don't think. And they might win another one this year. Like, it's unbelievable what they're able to do. Now, Anthony Davis is arguably the a top two player in the league. And so it makes it easier. I don't think there's any asterisks to those wins.
Well, I really think that we deserve a battle of LA in a series. I really hope that happens. Another team I think are pretenders, which are not going to have the chance. They're basically the West Coast Raptors or those Utah Jazz. Over the years, Donovan Mitchell is a star, but are those guys going to have enough to deal with the real true winners in the Western Conference? I think they're going to struggle in the playoffs yet again, but we'll see.
Just like Shaq already told Donovan Mitchell, he doesn't think he's ready for game time.
No. All right. Well, back to that. The Lakers did. It was from 1949 to 54 were those Minneapolis Lakers titles.
Count them for the
They're in. Those are counted.
Whatever.
Whatever. I don't like Boston, so give me a break. You guys are tied. Whether you like it or not, you're tied with the Lakers. It is what it is.
Wasn't there only like 8 teams back then? Like,
well, same with Boston when they were winning. I mean,
that's your asterisk. It's not if you were in the NBA or not. It's like we had a 1 in 8 chance of winning a championship every year.
Yeah, well, it's a belief of all. Yeah, the Leafs, Canadians, it's like with original 6. Yeah, 6 teams.
there's something hypocritical. I know this from listening to Bill Burr's podcast. There is something hypocritical about the Lakers claiming those championships against Boston. And I can't remember now what it is, and I'm too lazy to look it up. But before next podcast, I will find it.
Okay, you'll have to enlighten us because I'm sticking with the Lakers on this one just because of my hatred of Boston. But
fair.
What do we got? So I think that we've got our predictions for next week. I think that we'll wrap it up today.
What about Super Bowl predictions?
Oh, let's do that. We got to go out on a note. I'm taking KC. I am thinking it's going to be... I'm not a football guy, so I'm probably completely wrong in this. I don't know. I'm going to say KC wins by 7, and it's 35-28.
I'll say Brady. I think Brady's ruthless. He wants to end the whole Mahomes might be better than him. He wants to put a pin in that right away. And, you know, he's got that killer mentality, so I'm going to bank on Brady.
No, well,
I'm going to go Brady. I bet on the Bucks to cover 3.5. If you ask me what my confidence level in that bet is, it is incredibly low because KC is very good. But
guys,
to JB's point, I think Brady is the GOAT, and I'd love
you to are forgetting one important factor here of who KC's defensive coordinator is, and he is the Brady killer, Spagnuolo,
the guy from the Giants,
Spags. From the defeated the 16-0 Patriots. He's going to bring the heat on Brady. He can't handle the pressure.
We shall see.
Yeah. Anyways, I think you guys will probably end up being right. All right. That wraps it. Thank you, everyone. Until next week.